Hi, everybody, and welcome to The Stone Chapel, a podcast of the staff and friends of the Lanier Theological Library in Houston, Texas. My name is David Capes. I'm the Senior Research Fellow at the Library and your host for this series of podcasts. Our purpose is fairly simple. We want to bring to you great conversations with leading experts from around the world on biblical, theological, historical, and archaeological themes. Well, the list goes on. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. Joining me today on the Stone Chapel, Dr. Ben Blackwell, Associate Professor of Early Christianity and old friend, and we've been together a long time, Dr. Randy Hatchett, Professor of Theology and Philosophy at Houston Baptist, both gentlemen at Houston Baptist University. Good to see you guys.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
It is a pleasure.
Thanks for driving all the way from your side of town to our side of town. In Houston, that can be quite challenging.
Yeah, that's so context here. It's the second, the 99 loop is the second largest loop in the world. There's only in only Beijing one. They have, I think, they have eight loops, and the eighth loop
eight
is
loops.
Larger.
Oh gosh!
And so it if that puts the context, it's hard to imagine it.
It's a big circle, isn't it? It takes forever. We're here talking about their new book, Engaging Theology, A Biblical, Historical, and Practical Introduction, published by Zondervan Academic. So, gentlemen, what kind of book is this? I mean, we're surrounded by books. We have dictionaries here and monographs and commentaries. What kind of book is this? Dr. Hatchett?
Well, we thought there needed to be one more book on theology.
One more book was needed, yeah?
I think it arose for us to answer the kind of challenge that we have facing our typical incoming student.
Okay. So is it meant as a textbook then?
And we were hoping it would speak to a wider audience, but we targeted initially the kind of person who sits in our class.
Okay.
And so that's the sort of the genesis of it. We, after teaching, comparing notes for some time, we began to think in terms of what does this student need, and how would we retool the way we do theology to sort of address who they are.
So in that sense, it's more like, most theologies are written for insiders. Mm-hmm. So people that already have a natural interest, but also have some context. And I think in either among our students that are Christians, they don't have any context beyond their own local church. And we have a good portion of our students that are non-Christians. And so they need every bit of context. I mean, they don't even have that.
You tell the story somewhere in there about saying that you're studying theology in Britain.
Yep.
And people say, well, what's theology?
Yeah. Well,
I mean, you can't take anything for granted, can you, in terms of the average person.
Yeah. Well, even here, I was preaching at a church in South Houston, and they introduced me as a professor of theology, and I had somebody come up after church, and they were clearly members of the church participating. It's like, and she and her son were like, we're not sure what the word theology means, but we think it means something related to religion. And so in that sense, I mean, we're trying to help people engage theology, hence the title, Engaging Theology, but also make it a bit engaging as well, too, you know, that it has some interest in. The way that I've come to think about it is it's the Bible Project meets systematic theology in that sense.
So which of you are the Bible guy and which is the systematic theology? I mean, you're a professor of theology and philosophy, right?
Right. So turn me loose long enough and I'll do history. So
you do a little history somewhere.
Theology.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's part of what you do. You do Bible, you do history, but you also do kind of practical stuff. And as I read in the beginning of the book, you said the thing that sort of drove this is, is theology itself relevant these days?
I think that's a pressing question. And we tried to address that a couple of ways. That is just to take their context seriously. So we want to tie every exposition we do in with culture at large and then some particular practical kind of historical questions. Again, the idea would be something like this, that, you know, Christianity is a practice as well. It's not just a few ideas you hold at this moment in time, but it is a lifestyle and a practice. And so we wanted to sort of show that these doctrines had relevance in everyday life. And that was the effort at the end of each chapter to sort of connect it to lived experience.
Yeah, I would say in that sense, like orthodoxy is usually what you get in a theology textbook, and helping people, and it is the irrelevance of, you know, when you teach, say, the incarnation, that Jesus needed to be divine and human. You know, a lot of students, I got the feeling that, well, you could just as well need to argue that Jesus had to have six fingers on both hands to save us. They would think it's as relevant, or it's just a point of fact and doctrine that you could tell them they're supposed to affirm. And, you know, one of the things that I think doesn't make this just a textbook, although that's maybe its primary intended emphasis, is that about 15 or 20% of each chapter is devoted to the practices of this. So if you really believe that Jesus is divine and human, what does that mean for the life of discipleship, or you name any other doctrine that we treat, that there is this orthodoxy that is tied with orthopraxy.
And now, when you say orthodox, it's, again, we're kind of thinking, what does that mean? I mean, literally, and orthopraxy.
Mm-hmm. I think for us, orthodoxy means just the heart of the Christian tradition. Mm-hmm. Those kind of crucial doctrines we think articulated in the early church councils about
things that
the
are
nature
central
of Christ,
you know,
the Trinity, and so on. And so we work with a fairly sort of a centralized notion about these core ideas, and we sort of build out from there.
I grew up in a denomination that the sort of the slogan was no creed but the Bible, right? And but you guys begin with the Nicene Creed in the very beginning. So why sort of begin there? Why is that such a touch point for you?
Well, I'd say that goes back to the parallel to the Bible Project is, you know, what holds together the Bible Project is that they believe that the Bible speaks to one coherent story that finds its climax in Jesus. I can't remember exactly how they phrase it, but that's really what we see the Nicene Creed is. It's not something appended to the Bible. It's the spark notes of the Bible, right? It's the outline to help you understand and interpret the Bible. And so almost every phrase in the Nicene Creed is just taken out of the Bible.
Right.
And so when you have it there, it's a way to help you organize all the data points. I mean, the Bible is a long, complex set of texts. I mean,
difficult
over
to,
thousands
to,
of years,
difficult,
you know?
Right?
Yeah. And so having some sense of orientation of that movement from creation to the incarnation and salvation in Christ to the fulfillment in the afterlife is, and the restoration of the world, that's the arc of the Bible as well. And so the Nicene Creed is just helping as a shorter, more accessible way to read the Bible. But I think this is one of the things that's important for us is, you know, we've taught systematic theology at HBU for years now, and so many theology textbooks refer to the Bible, but they don't actually quote the Bible, or they're not coming to the biblical text as a story. It's doctrines that they're drawing out of the Bible. Almost, you know, I think Randy uses the language of an index, right? You just look up all of this, what is it? The term I'm thinking of here, but
free floating
concordance,
factoid.
You know, yeah. And so the whole thing here is our goal is that the Bible has a coherent narrative, and actually systematic theology or theology in general, particularly when it's done rightly, coheres directly with that narrative that comes out of the Bible, but also means that it's extending that narrative to culture. And so as you're engaging practices, or, you know, one of the things that I think we're unique about it is engaging world religions. It's like there's a conversation. We're not just in some Christian bubble. We're engaging the world here. And so for
and that challenge of pluralism is not going away.
Yeah,
right?
It's touching all those things.
Right. So. It's just increasing as time goes on. So how did you guys work together to get this done? I mean, I see there Randy Hatchett, Ben Blackwell, you know, at times, you know, you sort of take off on your own to tell a story, but how did you work together to get this done? It's a challenge, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a different animal. I mean, we actually followed the model that you have with rediscovering Paul there. So we actually got some coaching from the
the famous triad.
Richard.
Yeah.
Probably Randy Richards, I would imagine.
But talk about, you know, you write your stuff, but then you're pretty ruthless with the other friend. And so as you go along, and I think it was, we talked about how I have this long discursive sentences and Randy's are much more short. And so as we bring them together and edit one another, it worked out quite well.
Yeah. So where did this work take place?
Well, a good bit of it happened at Menudi's, a coffee place in Sugarland. And we would head there one morning, sometimes Tuesday and Thursday mornings, and check in. And
who bought the coffee?
Talked a lot. Well, we passed that around, I think.
I guess Zondervan bought the
Zondervan
coffee.
Zondervan bought
the coffee,
right?
That's what the advance
was. Katja Cobret bought the coffee, right?
So, but all that to say, then we'd break up, go to our little tables, and and just try to get as much done as we could. And it was sort of the thing where we couldn't do anything else because, you know, Ben was over there. I had to stay working. I couldn't slip out
or anything.
So a good bit of it was done under the inspiration of coffee, maybe.
It's caffeinated, stuff. We're talking to Dr. Ben Blackwell and Dr. Randy Hatchett about their book, Engaging Theology, A Biblical, Historical, and Practical Introduction. You start with talking about method. Why is that important? I mean, rather than taking the doctrine of creation, which is the first thing, in the beginning was God, you start with theological method. Why is that important to start with that?
Well, we're committed to doing several things. You mentioned starting with the creed. Mm. And we think we have to build out from Christian essentials. And we think the Trinity really is a description of God's deliberate kind of action in the world and so on. And so with that as the guiding kind of premise, then everything else kind of takes its shape from there. Mm. And we wanted to be very articulate and deliberate about saying, we're taking a certain approach to this. We do feel like what you called a while ago, orthodoxy is sort of essential. We feel that's the right sort of distillation and condensing of the Bible. It makes the right judgment and call about God's character. And once you have that sort of in place, then I think you're kind of liberated to read the Bible more freely. Mm-hmm. It's not just 100 different or 1,000 different options and endless kind of images and so on. We don't want to deny the Bible's richness, but we want to suggest that these ideas are the normative judgments of the church. And so it's both our effort, I think, to tap into that very deliberate mm-hmm. theology.
Mm. Yeah, it's always, this dilemma of starting with God or method or that. Mm-hmm. And so much of, I think, the method chapter that we do start with is actually, if God is so different than us, then we can't just come to theology like a set of facts in a textbook. We're engaging. And so a person. And so we talk about the idea of metaphor and analogy and, mm-hmm. and this idea of that drives that. And so in that sense, even the method is engaging God in this. And that's so much of what really grounds the book. I think it's very intentional that the Trinity is the first substantive chapter we treat mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. if you get God wrong, if you get the theos wrong, then you get the theology wrong, And so Trinity is the underground, the grounding principle for all theology. And so when we talk about revelation or salvation or ecclesiology and all these other things, it's like really these are just expressions of how we're engaging God and encountering God in the world.
The chapters after theological method are Trinity, Revelation, God in the world, Creator and creation, Jesus the Christ, the Messiah, incarnate Messiah, Holy Spirit, humanity and sin, salvation, the church, eschatology, the very end. Last things for last things, right?
Yeah.
How did you decide on that? I mean, obviously you started with Trinity because getting God right becomes important, but some of the other chapters, did it flow pretty clearly from the Trinity idea?
Yeah, I think it does. I think that really follows Ben's strategy in your own classwork.
Yeah, in that sense, those are the traditional loci of mm-hmm. systematic theology. And we're not quite doing systematic theology because we're doing more kind of a mere Christian approach to theology. So trying to sit, with a focus on orthodoxy, not just Protestants believe, but Catholics and Eastern Orthodox believers. Mm. While also, I mean, we're from a Baptist background. So, if others, as they read this, will not miss that. But, I'm part of a charismatic tradition now in the Vineyard. And so it's like they're mm-hmm. expanding out to some of those wider conversations. And so, following some of the traditional outlines of a theology book, but at the same time, not necessarily you know, restricted by confessional means in that way.
Hmm. So would a person who's Catholic be able to resonate with much of this? I mean, I realize it's Protestant primarily, but it, there is a centrality to it, right? I mean, there's a thing that could be amened by people who are Orthodox Christians or Catholic Christians.
Yeah, I think so. You know, I come from a Baptist tradition, and Ben, I think, comes from that same tradition now as in the Vineyard Church. And all that to say, we're not renouncing or whatever, but we're just trying to say maybe in today's world, the main thing is to recover what it means to be Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And we think there's some centrality to these, again, these key ideas. We think we have to build from there. And I think, you know, Ben mentioned before, you know, having no sense about the relevance of a doctrine, like it, you know, it doesn't make any, you know, it makes as much sense as us telling you that Jesus had six fingers or whatever.
Yeah.
I think we were trying to kind of double down and say, at the core, there's a really fundamentally different way you look at the world. Mm-hmm. When you look at the world through the classic Christian convictions of Trinity and Incarnation. Mm. And so it's that is what we wanted to make the driving kind of force. And so we did have a nice review or so from a Catholic, I do believe. The wonderful Peter Davids.
Yeah, and yeah. I'll say this. It's my Baptist students who complain about having to memorize the Nicene Creed because the Catholic students already know it.
They've been saying it every Sunday for a long time.
You know, and so I think in a lot of ways we're helping them explore the depth that's in their tradition that they may not have experienced in that same way. But all in the same way, I mean, we're trying to help Protestants see the depth in our tradition. And that's one of the things that we do at each chapter is to start with a story is that of a figure in history is to give some flesh on the bones that these are real people that engaging God in their context and you know the middle point there that it's a biblical historical and practical introduction is very important in that sense of like theology is very much about a conversation that the church has had over 2,000 years and helping people see that. Well, of course, Augustine and, you know, Thomas Aquinas and these other figures, many of them are Catholic, you know, theologians. And so we're helping to see that central tradition that we all share.
Well, it's 1,500 years, right, of history of Christianity before the Protestant Reformation comes along. And as John Barry uses the phrase, he said, well, we all had an undivided beginning. You know, you can't say it's Catholic, you can't say it's Orthodox, you can't say it's Protestant. But the beginning was there, right? And we've all sort of drawn from those traditions very deeply.
Yeah, I think that's the case. And so, of course, again, we're not, it's going to resonate most strongly with the low church folks, but even sacramental Protestants, I think, we went out of our way to highlight what's behind that, not what's grounding these different traditions to appreciate why they come. So it's more kind of the common watering hole and understanding the similarities and differences so that we can have a conversation that's not dispassionate, but without anger, you know, rancor, that, you know, appreciate the differences, but also one of the last things we end each chapter with or before the practices are, what are the debates that this stirs up in history? You know, it doesn't mean that just because there's a center that we agree on that the debates go away. It just helps us understand, well, why are these debated? And so going beyond just a list of discussion questions at the end of the chapter that you usually get, we give a paragraph or two or three to help explain why are Christians debating about faith and science, or why are they debating about, you name the versions of salvation and baptism and things like this. These mean something. We debate them because they touch these more central points. And so you can appreciate what's, you know, the unity as well as the diversity.
And they do shape our vision of the world, right?
Mm.
They do shape who we are
and
who we are becoming. And there's a lot of challenges out there for us, challenges of postmodernism, religious plurality. And we're grateful that you guys stopped by today to talk about your book, Engaging Theology, A Biblical, Historical, and Practical Introduction, published by Zondervan Academic. Dr. Blackwell, Dr. Hatchett, thank you so much.
Thank you, yeah. David.
Very much appreciated. Thanks.
Thanks to Brent Johnson and Janet Seifert for editing these podcasts. Thanks as well to Phil Keggy for our music. These podcasts are made possible by the generosity of Mark and Becky Lanier and the Lanier Theological Library Foundation. If you have questions, comments, or would just like to be in touch, please email us at podcast@lanierlibrary.org. Lanier is L-A-N-I-E-R. Thanks for listening.